time for emerging economies. Focus on India, as is pretty much always the case. That is in the company of Professor Dilip Menon, who is the Mellon Chair of Indian Studies and the Director of the Center for Indian Studies in Africa at Wits University. Very, very good morning to you, Dilip. And tell us, please, if you will, about India's solar energy goals.
Good morning, John, and best wishes for the new year. On solar energy, at the climate change conference last year in Glasgow, India had announced that by 2030, we would be generating around 500 gigawatts of power from solar energy, and that we would be meeting 50% of our energy requirements from renewable energy. And this seems a feasible story from 2014 to 2021. We've seen a 15-fold expansion of investment in renewable energy. But questions are being raised in India about if we are to generate energy on this scale, where is the land going to come from? And increasingly, we are seeing the classification of semi-arid and arid grassland savanna ecosystems as wasteland. The tremendous loss of biodiversity and livelihoods, of pastoralists in particular. The other concern is that hydroelectricity, which is the main source of energy right now, is controlled by the public sector. I mean, it controls 90%, whereas with solar, wind, etc., 95% is controlled by the private sector, which raises issues of regulation and so on. So this is something that's both a cause for concern as well as a cause for congratulations.
And the religious, what is it, religious intolerance, government intolerance of certain religions is something that has been increasing under the current Indian president. And you want to talk about the continuing persecution of Christians in India.
Yes, sadly enough, that's true. I mean, ever since the Hindu Nationalist Party has come to power, we have seen the increasing persecution of Dalits, the former untouchables, of Muslims, in public lynchings. Christians constitute around 30 million of India's population, and we've seen an increasing persecution. Not so long ago, we had a missionary and his wife who were burnt alive by Hindu fundamentalists. Over Christmas last year, there were attacks on churches in central India, schools and worshippers were attacked. The Madhya Pradesh and central India passed an anti-conversion law, which would grant prison sentences of up to 10 years for those attempting to convert tribals and other groups to Christianity. 10 states in North India have passed anti-conversion laws. All of this goes alongside the invitation extended in October to Pope Francis. And if Pope Francis decides to visit India, it will be the first visit by a pope since 1999. So in that sense, while the present government is increasing persecution at home, it's also trying to build bridges abroad. So I'm not sure how this dialectic is going to work.
The introduction of the four-day work week?
Yes, and that's related to the lockdown and the perceived loss in productivity over 2020 and 21. The government is planning to introduce a four-day work week, which means that workers will work for 12 hours every day with weekends off. So new labor codes are being introduced in the states on wages, social security, industrial relations, and so on. There's going to be a reduction in take-home pay, and it will be compensated by the fact that firms will now have to provide higher provident fund liabilities. So again, it's not very clear how this is going to work. Is this going to be more exploitative of workers? Because firms with 300-plus workers now can go ahead with layoffs, retrenchment without government permission. So while this is an international trend, as you know, Japan, Denmark, Scotland, New Zealand, and recently the UAE have moved to four-day work weeks, in India it's not very clear what the impact would be on labor.
I think that was the first focus on India this year, and thank you very much for being part of it. Professor Dilip Menon joining us there from Johannesburg.